Laudator Jesus Christus. This is the English program of Vatican Radio.
Hello and a very warm welcome to today's broadcast. I'm Veronica Scaresbrick and I'll be with you for the next half hour. In a few moments, I'll be bringing in Advent on a musical note. Remembering the feast of Saint Andrew with our popular Latin lover. But first of all, I'd like to introduce you to someone you may not be too familiar with. She's Leodan O'Connor and has spent the past month or so working with us here at the English programme. Among the many interviews she's been asked to do for us was one which took her on an unexpected journey through time and space, right across the ocean to Cuba, where a beatification is to take place on Saturday 29th of November. Let's listen.
Earlier in the week, I was asked to speak to the Prior General of the Hospitaller Order of St. John of God, Brother Donatus Forkin. He is about to leave for Cuba to attend the beatification ceremony of Brother José Olayo Valdez, a member of his order who lived in the 19th century. And Brother Donatus quoted Pope Benedict's words on Sunday last, the 23rd of November.
The Holy Father, in his at the Angelus message just here on Sunday,
Fratel José Olayo Valdez.
Set him up as a modern and heavenly intercessor for the people of Cuba and particularly for people who are sick or marginalized, for religious and for those who work in hospitals and centers caring for their sick brothers and sisters.
The people of Cuba may still remember another Roman pontiff, John Paul II, who traveled all the way there in January 1998, mentioning Brother Olayo on this occasion, where he also expressed his hope for a swift canonization.
In your national history, there have been many pastors who, because of unshakable fidelity to Christ and his church, have stood by the people in every trial. The witness of their generous dedication, their words in proclaiming the gospel and in defending the dignity and inalienable rights of persons and their promotion of the integral well-being of the nation are a precious spiritual patrimony worthy of preservation and cultivation. Among these pastors, the servant of God, José Olayo, of the Hospitaller Brothers of St. John of God, is a witness to mercy whose life and service to the most needy is a magnificent example of consecration to the Lord.
But let's get back to Brother Donatus to discover more about Brother Olayo, this magnificent role model from his order, who he was, the difficulties which he had faced and through which he persevered.
Brother Olayo had quite an extraordinary life, really. He was born in 1820, in February the 12th, in Havana. He became an orphan. We don't know exactly who his parents were, but his mother, obviously with great stress, had left him at the orphanage with a little note to say that he had not yet been baptized. So he was raised in an orphanage in Havana, and at the tender age of 13 or 14 years, he entered the Hospital Order of St. John of God. He was transferred to the community at the St. John of God Hospital in Camaway, and for 54 years he lived there. He never left the hospital except for one night he was forced to leave. He was working in the hospital and all of that had been nationalized or taken over by the government, but he continued to work there, and obviously he was respected within that because he was allowed to work there, and he became the chief infirmarian, and he did study in how to do surgery and dentistry and all of the needs that people would have. He was self-taught, if you like, to help them, but it was during a very difficult time time in the history of Cuba. And at that time, there was a lot of struggle going on between the Cuban and the Spanish soldiers. The war raged for about 10 years. And, of course, at that time as well, there was this suppression of all religious and religious communities. So they were exclaustrized. Most of them were sent home or they left to their religious communities.
Despite these difficulties, Brother Olayo endured. I was told of his continuous dedication to helping those around him, especially those whom society had cast out. His care for others led to him being known among Cubans as Father of the Poor and the Apostle of Charity.
And his brother, St. John of God, he had made the three vows of religion and a fourth vow of hospitality. Irrespective of religion, background, political beliefs, whatever side, he served them all. Now, he remained true to that right to his death. And that was kind of an extraordinary thing because Brother Elijah was on his own for about 10 years. He was with another brother for a number of years who eventually died. He cared for him in his final illness, but he remained on his own for more than 10 years and worked in the hospital caring for the sick. He cared for the wounded during the time of the war. He was kind of a bridge, if you like, or an advocate, at great personal risk to himself between the military and the civilian population, trying to prevent any massacres and trying to win for them whatever material and needs that they had. He cared for the casualties of the war. He cared for prisoners. He cared for the slaves. He cared for everybody. There was nobody excluded. You know, in times of war, people take sides. Now, Brother Olayo, he didn't take sides. He took the side of everybody. And they really loved and admired him for that, because he loved them first.
What really struck me listening to the life and troubles of Brother Olayo were the similarities I began to see between his life's work and that of a person well known to us all, the Blessed Mother Teresa of Calcutta. I couldn't help but wonder why Brother Olayo's tale had not travelled further than his own country. Brother Donatus told me how the Cuban's life was, until recently, unknown even to the Hospitaller Order, but how the Cuban people have kept him alive through their devotion to him over a century after his death.
During the generalate of Brother Brian O'Donnell in 1989, that the Bishop of Camaway, because the order had been suppressed with other religious, we hadn't heard of him for so many decades. And then the bishop contacted us that they were celebrating the anniversary of his death in 1989. And it's there we began to realise we had such an extraordinary brother as a member of our order. His tomb was always painted with flowers and there was all people going there in pilgrimage. People themselves had recognised him as an extraordinary man who lived in justice and holiness before the Lord. When he died, Camaway came to pay the respects and to lay him to rest. But he wasn't forgotten. He continued, the memory continued to live on in the people right to this very day. And I suppose that's why God gives us saints and blesses as models to encourage all of us in our journey through life. And Brother Elijah had to overcome extraordinary difficulties in his life. And he could identify with that because of his own personal experience.
Brother Olayo has never been forgotten, and his image graces the front of a nursing home in Camaway that is named after him. While he is the second Cuban priest to be declared blessed, the beatification ceremony will, for the first time, take place on Cuban soil. Brother Donatus told me how he thinks this event will affect the Cuban people who are already moved by the work of the Lord's servant, and how it will stimulate and inspire their faith to grow.
To have something of that nature, for those of us who are Catholic and Christian, to have something in our own land where the people can gather together to celebrate one of their own. And this, we recognize this man as a really holy person, one of us who is declared to be blessed, to be a model. To do that in your own place, I think that's fantastic. That is bound to have a great ripple effect, not just in Camaway, but across Cuba, across into Miami, where there are so many Cubans and Cuban descent and around the world. So this is a great, great source of encouragement for the Cuban people and great recognition of somebody who was truly a great human being. And for us who are Christian, a great man of God. His beatification is a stimulus for us and an inspiration to continue despite difficulties. And as Brother Elijah discovered, people are really good. Deep down, people are good. They want to do what is right, and they respond when they see somebody like Brother Elijah showing the way. So we are greatly encouraged that our brother should be raised to the altars in this way, and we join the Cuban church and the Cuban people in rejoicing with them on the 29th.
The conversation ended on a note of hope, how Brother Olayo's exceptional life can encourage and inspire us all, religious and non-religious alike, but particularly us Christians, a beacon of light to guide the way in darkness and in the future.
Looking towards the future, this gives us great hope. That God in his wisdom and the church in her wisdom gives us men and women to encourage us. So a person like Brother Elijah is a great model for the human person who wants to live a really good life as a human being. And then as a Christian, to be faithful to the very core of our Christian faith, faithful to Christ. Faithful to Christ at all costs. Never, his faith never wavered. And that was one of the great things that he had that sustained him. And he wasn't on his own because God was with him. And he found his strength in that belief deep inside him and the hope to continue to move forward. We all can find in Brother Elijah an inspiration for our way of life that gives us courage, gives us hope for the future.
I'm Leathan O'Connor.
And our thanks there go to Leodan O'Connor, and of course to the Prior General of the Hospitallers of the Order of St. John of God, Brother Donatus Falcon, for proudly sharing with us there his knowledge of this future saint of his order, Brother José Olayo Valdés. And now why not move on in the broadcast on a more musical note? Let's bring in Advent with music historian Monsignor Philip Whitmore.
A generation or two ago, a very unpopular job among seminary students was ringing the bell first thing in the morning to get everyone out of bed. The reason it was unpopular, of course, was that it meant getting up even earlier, so as to be ready on time. At the start of Advent, we hear again and again the call to wake up, to get ready, to prepare ourselves for the day that is dawning. We all know how hard that can be if we're feeling sleepy. But we all know how necessary it is if we have something important to do. What could be more important than being ready to greet our Saviour when he comes? Wachet auf, ruft uns die Stimme. Awake, a voice is calling. That's the title of an old German hymn for Advent. The version we just heard was arranged by Michael Praetorius early in the 17th century, but probably more familiar to modern listeners is the arrangement made by J.S. Bach 100 years later. If any of you have worked with church choirs or liturgy planning groups, you'll know how hard it can be to prepare the music Sunday after Sunday for public worship. Imagine what it would be like if you had to compose the music as well. But that's exactly what J.S. Bach did for most of his life. He wrote his cantatas for use during the Sunday liturgy in Weimar and in Leipzig, often producing a new one each week. The cantata he wrote for the last Sunday of November in 1731 was Wachet auf, and he based a lot of the music on the tune we've been listening to. Now, I bet some of you are thinking, yes, it's lovely music, but it doesn't sound much like the tune we heard before. Wait for it. Bach is setting the scene with a beautiful counter-melody, preparing the way for the coming of the tune. Here it is, in long, slow notes in the voice parts. Listen now to a passage a bit later on, where Bach sets the second verse. Zion hears the watchmen singing. That's the counter melody. Now for the tune. Many people find the spiritual quality of Bach's music a great help with their prayer. It can settle us into a recollected frame of mind. If you get the chance, you may like to listen to a recording of Bach's cantata Wachet auf as part of your Advent devotion. At the heart of it is a dialogue between Christ and the soul. When the heavenly bridegroom comes, he invites the soul to join him at the wedding feast. No eye has ever seen, no ear has ever heard such joy as this.
Heartfelt thanks there, as always, to Monsignor Philip Whitmore, a music historian currently working at the Vatican's Secretariat of State. Finally, it's time for our weekly rendezvous with our popular Latin lover, Carmelite Father Reginald Foster, who I've asked to focus on stories surrounding the figure of Saint Andrew, the apostle who's patron saint of the Church of Constantinople, and indeed was once called, together with his brother Peter, by Jesus to become fisher of men. Be sure to watch the change of pace and tone. Well, Foster, today I'd like to speak about one of your favourite popes, Pius II, and the head of St. Andrew.
1453, of course, the Turks took over Constantinople. And Andrew's head, for one reason or another, this is all fable, fairy tales, was preserved in Constantinople. And the Christians, some Christians, had such a veneration for Andrew and his head that they got his head out of Constantinople and ran over to the Adriatic Sea, almost like to Albania today. You know? Kures. And they were determined to bring Andrew's head to Rome. And that's how that whole thing started.
Can you just say that in Latin? The Christians ran off with St. Andrew's head?
De cucurerunt cum Andrei capite. quod servare voluerun, which they wanted to save. Et inde, etiam cupiebant, they were desirous, Romam istud capo deferre, to bring that head to Rome. Cum hoc audivisset Pius Secundus, totus perturbatus est.
Pius II was upset.
Well, he was so moved. Commotus est.
You said perturbatus?
Perturbatus. He was so...
perturbed.
Well, yeah, overturned or... he was totally disheveled.
Distraught.
Yeah, distraught.
So how would you say distraught, disheveled?
I know, that's all the same word.
In Latin, it's all the same word.
Yeah, more or less. And so he heard that this head was coming from Albania over to, like, Pescara, you know, on a ship.
Well, for our listeners, Pescara is a city on the Adriatic Sea.
Yes. And he got this idea, and it's really incredible because in his autobiography it must fit about 20 pages.
The whole story?
The whole story of this head business. And that's why you have on the Ponte Milvio out there. Why? Because Pius II went out there and had a platform built where he would meet the head of St. Andrew coming down the Via Cassia, you see, which more or less ends at Ponte Milvio today.
For those who don't know, Via Cassia is one of the consular roads, no?
Yes.
It reaches Rome from the north.
Oh, yeah, almost up to Venice. The Via Cassia, the famous Cassius.
And there's a bridge there.
And there's a bridge there.
Which is linked to Constantine.
Oh, yes, and a million things. Oh, yeah, and it's very historical. So he decided, Pius II decided he would meet the head of Andrew at Ponte Milvio. Well, you can't believe it. You just can't believe the narration. And he went out there and they came down like in a procession carrying this urn or something with the head of Andrew.
You say that in Latin, please.
And he said, urna inclusum gestabant Andrea caput. Quod cum vidisset Pius Secundus cecidit in Genua. He fell on his knees. Et cepit flere, et plorare, and to cry. Et clamare. Ooh! Et quid fit, he was a Latinist, of course. And he wrote a whole poem of about 12 strophes celebrating St. Andrew. He was so moved by this idea that the head, maybe, he thought, the head of the Apostle St. Andrew was coming to Rome. And he was out there for about 3 days on this platform. And you can almost see, I can see where the square is, where the platform was. And he had speeches, and people had speeches, and he was crying and screaming and falling on his face.
Why was Pius II so attached to the figure of St. Andrew?
Oh, I don't know. He had this idea.
Well, he's one of the apostles to start with, no? And he's also the brother of Peter.
And so he said, here, Peter is the patron of Rome, and now we're getting here the second patron of Rome, Andrew, which wasn't the case. But anyway, and that's how this whole thing started.
Yeah, there's a little chapel just by Ponte Milvio, which houses a beautiful fresco depicting a profile of Pius II in pinks looking at a box containing the rather sombre head of St. Andrew with an X-shaped cross coming out of that box over Andrew's head.
Yeah, well, that's kind of nonsense. I found it by chance the other day. The X-shaped Andrew's cross, you know, is from the... from the 4th, yeah, very late. Has nothing to do with Andrew, but that's how they decided. Even on the facade of St. Peter's up there, you have Andrew with the massive cross. St. Andrew's cross, which they say is really kind of a silly invention of the 11th or 12th century. And he accepted this head, and they sang this hymn, and they marched over to St. Peter's, and that's where it was. And then Paul VI gave the head back.
Yeah.
Gave the head back to Constantinople. After centuries and ages, 500 years almost, where they finally said, this is your head and it's Andrew's head. and Paul VI gave it back. But Pius II was totally taken up. That's why Pius II and his nephew, Pius III, are buried in Sant'Andrea della Valle. You know, down from right across the street from you.
Yeah, I've seen it. That's monumental.
On the top there, and one, Pius II and Pius III are looking at each other. And that was done much later because they were buried at St. Peter's. But someone's Cardinal Andrea della Valle kind of mentioned this, and he was the Cardinal of St. Andrew, and Andrew and Pius, and so he had the two Piuses buried, fixed up there in San Andrea della Valle. But there's a whole story there of Pius II's obsession, almost.
How do you say obsession in Latin?
Obsession. Bon.
It sounds rather like a modern word.
Yeah, obsessio. Actually, obsessio is a Latin word, too. To be possessed. Obsessio. And that was his obsession.
What's the story about the Janiculum, the head of Andrew, being stolen and taken up there?
There's a famous thing up there on the Janiculum where I live. Because someone did steal the head of Andrew during the term of Pius IX. This is the 1840s. And I don't know what they did. And what do? They go up the street there, you know, along the walls. Yeah. You know, they go up to the Janiculum. And they threw the head in the grass. And to this day, if you go up there, there is a little shrine. A little shrine there in marble.
A little shrine in marble. How do you say that?
Sacellum marmorium. Sacellum marmorium. And what do you know? Down below in Latin it's written, this is where the head of Andrew, having been stolen, was found.
But the head of St. Andrew was housed in St. Peter's Basilica before that, no?
Yes, but some people got the thing and ran away and then threw it in the grass. And Pius IX put up a shrine where they found Andrew's head. It's about 3 blocks away from my house.
They ran away and threw Andrew's head in the grass.
Well, excucurerunt, Andre que caput in gramen proiecerunt. Certainly it was, and they wanted to get rid of this thing. What are we going to do with the head of an apostle? It must have dawned on them, and they just threw it away. And that's where it was found, in the grass. And there is a shrine to this day where they found Andrew's head. And the date is Pius IX, 1840 or something.
Oh. Desecration, what horrible people. The word desecration, is it a word of Latin origin?
Well, certainly. Sacrum is to, sacrare is to sacrifice or to make sacred. Desacrare is to make unsacred. That's where you get your desecration.
As always, our warmest thanks to our popular Latin lover. He's Carmelite Father Reginald Foster, who's currently working at the Vatican's Secretariat of State as the Pope's own Latinist. And that's all I have time for on today's broadcast. Thanks so much for listening. I'm Veronica Scaresbrick. Should you wish to check out our website, the address is www.vaticanradio.org. Bye for now.
You've been listening to the English program of Vatican Radio. Laudator Jesus Christus.